America Trends Podcast is part of the MHNR Network. MHNRnetwork.com.
What you're about to experience is one man's quest to see beyond the tumultuous period we're in and to envision what lies just beyond our grasp, yet well within our reach. Welcome to Larry Rifkin's America Trends, where the future has arrived, and it's just in time.
Welcome back to America Trends. I'm Larry Rifkin. I love the Carvana commercial with the two salesmen asking, how can they find a car without me? Frankly, millions of Americans have been trying to do that for years. Avoid the showroom, the pushy guy in a bad suit, and his manager, who inevitably enters the equation at some point in the deal-making process. So has the era of the local car dealership ended in America? Our guest consults with these folks, and he says, hold on, it's not over just yet. But to keep up with the change in the external car buying environment, things are going to have to change inside the dealership. My dealership, where I recently got an oil change, just built a huge, new state-of-the-art facility. A wise move? Let's discuss it all today on America Trends.
Two critical purchases in all of our lives, homes and automobiles, are changing. The 6% realtor is being replaced by a range of options, both on the ground and online. People are even purchasing homes that they've never been in. And car purchasing is changing, too. To discuss how much and in what ways is Max Zanin, the ultimate automotive retail expert. Welcome, Max, to America Trends.
Larry, thank you very much for having me on your podcast.
Well, it's my pleasure. I asked you off the air whether you were related to CarMax, and you said no, no relation.
I wish.
I know. But speaking of CarMax, let's start there. What the heck is CarMax, and what is Carvana and Vroom and all of these new services? When I used to just go down the street to my local dealership, named after a prominent family in my community, what's going on here?
So what's going on here is this. CarMax is the largest used car dealer in the United States. It's a publicly traded company. I think, you know, they sell around 700,000 or 800,000 cars a year. And what makes them really, really different from your local dealer, right, is the fact that there is no negotiation. The price you see is the price you pay. And the same can be said about Carvana, and the same can be said about Vroom. So Carvana and Vroom are the new players on the market that are trying to provide Amazon type of experience because they do not have a physical showroom like CarMax. So you would go to their website, you know, search for a car and do the entire transaction online. And then they would deliver the car to your workplace or to your house.
Now, we're talking about used cars here, just to be clear. And in the past, used cars weren't always gotten at a dealership. Often they were gotten at a small little used car dealership, and you really wondered what you were getting and whether that car had been in an accident. I mean, what is it that they guarantee about previously used, whatever, reconditioned car? What is it that they give you as an assurance that perhaps somebody down the street, Tony's used cars, doesn't?
I don't think there's a big difference between the smaller used car dealers, the traditional dealers, you know, the brick and mortar dealers, and let's say the bigger players. Because, you know, due to technology, right, you as a consumer can look up a Carfax, you know, based on the VIN number of the vehicle that you are looking to buy or interested in. And you will know if the car had a previous bad history, that if it was in an accident, if it has a salvage title or something like that. So what Carvana and Vroom and CarMax, I think, are doing is that they're offering a different car buying experience, right? Because if we're being honest, right, most people do not like what happens in the showroom in the car dealership. They don't like the fact that it takes too long. They don't trust the salesperson. They don't trust the process. And really, you know, I don't think they like to negotiate. Every single day, right, people like you and I get conditioned by companies like, let's say, Amazon, that you can find something online, put it in your shopping cart, get it delivered to your house. And if you don't like it, you can give it back. And I think that's the ultimate pitch for companies like Carvana and Vroom, because they give you an opportunity after you purchase the car and they delivered it to your house to give it back with no questions asked. They give you, I think, 7 days to decide if this is the car for you.
Okay, now this is the used car market, or the previously owned market, as it's been typified. But we know that many of the new dealers have also relied upon their used car stock because they're taking in a lot of cars when they're sending out new cars or leasing cars. So what's the impact on the new car dealerships from all of these entities? I know in my state, for example, we're pretty heavily regulated, and the new car dealers are very much a powerful force at our state capital. Are they starting to push back and saying that the impact, even of a CarMax or Carvana, even though they're not selling new cars?
I don't think so. You know, I don't think so because, again, you know, these are different businesses. You know, used cars and new cars are different businesses, because in order for you to sell a new car, you have to be a franchise dealer. And you have to jump through hoops, right, to become, let's say, a Toyota dealer. It's not easy. So your main goal when you become a new car dealer, right, is to sell new cars and to sell parts and service, and you also have a used car department. You know, used car dealers, whether, you know, it's CarMax, Carvana, or your local independent, they don't have the benefit of new car sales, and most often they don't have their own service and parts departments either. So they just, you know, they have to be really good at one thing and one thing only. So I think that the bigger danger and the bigger pushback that I see from new car dealers is companies such as Tesla and other electric vehicle makers that are selling cars direct to consumers, right? So basically Tesla does not have independently owned dealerships. They're all corporate owned stores. So basically, they were successful in breaking the franchise laws. And I think that's the real danger, because Tesla was able to set the precedent. And I think all other electric vehicle makers are going to follow that path and try to sell direct to consumers without having a network of franchise dealerships.
Okay, we will talk about that, because already I'm seeing in the Wall Street Journal Ford to test a new way of selling cars. They want to put you in a new car in 6 to 8 weeks. They want to shift the way it sells vehicles. They plan to do a bigger portion of their sales by having buyers order from the factory and then wait rather than pick it up from the selection available at the dealership. Is Ford getting a lot of pushback on this, or do you expect it?
You know, I think it's more of a cultural thing. So in America, we're used to having choices. And that's why traditionally new car dealers would carry 60 to 90 day inventory on the ground. Mm-hmm. So when you and I go in to pick a car, they can say, of course, we have it in blue, we have it in black and red and white and silver with this package, that package. Everything is on the ground and you can take it home today. On the other hand, if you look at Europe, right, culturally, you know, maybe because real estate is an issue, or maybe because they just have a different approach to buying and selling cars, you know, most European dealers do not carry any significant inventory on the ground. So you would go to a car dealership and say, I'm interested in this Honda Civic, and they will help you build
the car the way you like it, right? Whether it's the color, the package, the configuration. And then, you know, they'll take a deposit and say, well, Larry, you can come back. It probably takes about, you know, 8 weeks for the factory to produce the car and ship it to us. I am not sure if American consumers are willing to wait. You know, I just find it hard to believe because we live in the now, right? No matter what it is. And I think, again, going back to Amazon, right? I think Amazon is the proof of the concept that we want everything now. Right. First, they had the Prime program, right, that said we will deliver within 2 days, right? And then they said, well, now we're going to deliver the next day. Now, in New York City, right, I'll give you an example. I live in New York City, right? They have a program called Amazon Now, which means that they will deliver the stuff to you within 2 hours. But I'm just saying, like, if I get my stuff within 2 hours, you need to tell me I'm willing to wait 8 weeks for a car. I doubt it.
Well, I know we're in the midst of a time when people are having to wait, but that's a transitory thing, I think, in terms of computer chips and the like. I think we will resolve that supply chain issue, so I'm not going to focus on that since we deal with trends. But I do want to ask you about another trend. I mean, here we've had all these family-owned. In my state of Connecticut, I can rattle off the names of those who've owned so many car dealerships over the years. And now, all of a sudden, places like New Century and Auto Nation, which is huge, I mean, they're coming in, they're gobbling up all these family-owned dealerships. And I was reading where the pie is worth about $1 trillion split between 10,000 owners. There's tech disruption, there's consolidation, and Morgan Stanley thinks there'll be 10 monolithic mega fleet managers in the future. I mean, what do you see happening?
You know, the beauty of working for Morgan Stanley or any other investment bank, right? You can make any ridiculous prediction, right? And you can do it with conviction and get away with it, right? Because you will not get caught, right? Because this is just a pure fantasy, right? Just to put this in perspective, right? There are over 18,000 franchise dealerships in America. AutoNation, which is the largest auto group in the country, barely has 330 stores. So automotive retail is the most fragmented business in America because it's not like, let's say, Facebook and Instagram, right, where you have like two major players. Or it's not like investment banking where you have Morgan Stanley, Goldman Sachs, you know, and a few other players. You know, it's absolutely not like that, right? And a lot of people are not interested in consolidation, and the proof is in the numbers, right? Even if you combine, I think we have 5 publicly traded auto groups in the country. If you combine all of their dealerships, they will not add up to 1,000 out of 18,000.
So you think the family dealerships, that which we've gotten to know over the years in our communities, and in many cases very good publicly spirited individuals, and they help to support local radio stations and television stations, that in fact they will be around for a longer period of time. But what do they have to do? Because with this desire for the consumer to be in control, we're all going online. We're all shopping ahead of the experience of going into the dealership, an experience, as you say, we're not terribly thrilled about. We think it takes too long. We think we're being really jostled around. We think there's too much paperwork, too many fees. I mean, what are they doing to make themselves better at what they do against the backdrop of the consumer being a lot more armed when they go in?
I think the second car dealers realize that their competition is Amazon and Apple and not other car dealers, everything changes, right? Because you don't negotiate with Apple. You can go into the Apple store, do your research on a phone or on a computer, right, and then go back home and make that purchase online for the same dollar amount. There is no catch, right? Mm-hmm. So the second car dealers understand that this is what today's consumers are looking for. then, you know, they will be able to change their sales process and the way they treat customers. And unfortunately, you know, not everybody's on the same page, and that's why, you know, still car dealers are not the most popular, you know, business owners in the country.
Well, how well equipped are they? I mean, the people who come in today, when you're thinking of the average consumer, vis-a-vis the average salesperson, I mean, what kind of contest of wills or information or knowledge is it today as you see it? Because you consult with a lot of car dealers. You know a whole lot about what's going on the ground. Are they ready for the type of consumer who's coming in today?
They're ready, willing, and able. But also, I think there's a letdown from the factory, right? Because when you're a franchise dealer, you have a partnership with the factory, right? So if you're a General Motors dealer, right, you want to have certain support from the factory in terms of training, right? And that piece, I think, is really missing. I'll give you a perfect example. There's a certain word track that a lot of GM dealers use when they appraise your used car. And it goes something like this. Larry, you know, we have a lot of wholesalers that we work with, and they're basically desperately looking for a car similar to yours. And because of that, you know, we, unlike other dealers, will be able to give you a top dollar for your trade. So I'm paraphrasing, but that's the gist of it. Just to put this in perspective, right, this word track was written by GM in 1920s. So literally almost 100 years ago. Right, they haven't perfected, you know, their training. So a lot of it is exactly that, right? Car business is a little antiquated compared to other businesses.
What about high tech? I mean, everything I read says that today's, and I haven't been in the market for about 3 years, that today's consumers often don't need to take a test drive. I mean, that's one thing about the reliability of the cars today. I mean, we know that they're made so much better than they have been in the past. But people do want a high-tech experience when they're planning to purchase a car. They've probably gone online and done a virtual ride in the car. I mean, what does that translate into at the dealership? What do they need to have, the tools, the gizmos, and the type of expertise about, you know, the way the GPS works, the way this happens? What do they need to share that perhaps in the past was secondary to the consumer or not even part of the driving experience, since cars today are almost like a whiz-bang computer?
So, you know, there's still two types of people. There are people like me, right, that I've never test-driven a car in my life, only because even if I did, I wouldn't know if it was good or not, because I'm not a trained engineer, and if I took a car for a spin for 5 or 10 minutes, I really wouldn't know, right? I mean, let's be honest. But then there's a majority of consumers that really do feel that they should take the car for a spin, and I don't blame them, because whether you're spending, you know, $5,000 on a car or $105,000, You deserve to know how it feels and if it's for you. You know, so I think dealers have this opportunity to make a very good first impression when customers come in to test drive a car. And I think that's the real key. Now, after delivery, you're right, these cars are like spaceships, right? And, you know, listen, I bought a new car. I mean, I couldn't figure out how to turn on air conditioning, you know, and I'm in this business, you know. So what they really need to do is something that I think Apple does very well with Apple Geniuses, where you can go to an Apple store and they have a dedicated section with the employees that know everything about everything, right, when it comes to Apple. So you should follow the same example, right, and either have these geniuses or delivery coordinators, whatever you want to call them, that job is to really explain how this piece of equipment works, right? And again, this is another opportunity to leave a long-lasting impression on the consumer, because once you sell the car, right, the relationship doesn't end there. It's only starting, right? Because you really hope as a car dealer that your customers will come back and do their scheduled maintenance with you as well.
Well, is that the key? I mean, is that really what the dealership is in business for? They know they're going to get beaten around the edges. The people have gone on their various sites. They've gone, if they are members of Costco, maybe I can get a better deal at the Subaru dealer down the road, whatever it may be. But they're really trying to get that service relationship for the long term. I mean, is that really where the margins for selling a new car may not be as great as they were at one time when the consumer didn't have a lot of information? But that today the servicing, and yet at the same time, the servicing is less necessary. I mean, not a regularly scheduled, but because these cars are so much better built.
Correct. So the problem is that the profit margin is much greater in the service department than in the sales department. But unfortunately, a lot of car dealers don't realize that. And that's why service retention is very low, meaning that whenever you have to go and do an oil change or do some other form of scheduled maintenance, a lot of, I would say majority of consumers choose to go elsewhere, whether it's Jiffy Lube or their independent mechanic in the neighborhood. You know, they choose to avoid the dealership. And that's why I say, you know, dealers need to make these long-lasting impressions in order to retain customers. Because without service and parts, it will be very difficult, you know, to survive in selling cars, especially after the chip shortage is resolved, you know, and once that happens, there'll be a flood of new cars. They'll be very competitive and dealers will have to go back to not making any money selling new cars. That's the honest truth. You know, before this chip shortage, it was virtually impossible to make money selling a new car.
And what about these who are manufacturer dealers? You know, they started out, they only sold the Chevys or GM, and now they're selling Mitsubishi, they're selling, you know, whatever it may be. I mean, how difficult is that to know all these products and to sell all of them the same way? Maybe there are more incentives from one manufacturer to another, and therefore the dealership really emphasizes one or the other. That's been a big change over the recent years.
You know, there'll be an interesting experiment, because I don't know if you know, the new Hummer is coming out, and it will be sold through GMC dealerships. And I think it's like $100,000 to $120,000 car. So very expensive. And GM says that this car will be sold the same way Tesla is sold, meaning that there will be no negotiation. So you would go to the GMC dealership, look at the car. If you like it, you'll see the MSRP, and that's exactly what you're going to pay for the car. Just imagine, right, that you walk into this dealership, and to the left, there is a Hummer that you cannot negotiate on. And to the right, there is a GMC, let's say, Yukon Denali, right? Also $100,000 car, but you can negotiate on it, right? So it looks like the manufacturers are a little confused, and they're going to confuse the consumers even more. And because of that, they're only making car dealers' life much harder. If you look at it from really, really long distance, I believe that the ultimate answer is for car dealers to switch to one price, meaning that you go into the dealership and the price is not negotiable, whatever the price is, right? Whether it's low or high, it doesn't matter, right? Because then salespeople in the dealership can really focus on product knowledge, right? They're not going to sell you the price or the payment or the interest rate. They're going to tell you why this car is better than other cars that you're looking at. And you will get a much better experience buying the car, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. And I've got to say, there's so many ads now for the Carvanas and the Brooms that are really, again, putting down the typical, stereotypical salesperson within a dealership. And these negative stereotypes are just pounded into our heads.
And I wonder what impact that has both on the employee over time, knowing that a person is approaching them with a lot of doubt in their mind that they're going to get the straight scoop or that they are going to be able to, you know, come to some understanding without somebody really winning in the process. And usually they think it's the dealer. I got to go to my manager. I've got to do this. I got to tack on this fee. No, and, but they're all emphasizing that in their ads. So they're compounding what's already been a pretty well-established stereotype in the mind of the consumer.
You know, one thing about Carvana, right, or Vroom, what's amazing about it, right, is that they don't have anything that they can possibly trademark. So if you think of it as an investor, right, why would you invest into something that cannot be trademarked? Because the theory is that anybody else can do the same thing that you're doing, right? Mm-hmm. So the idea is that car dealers, if they really wanted to, right, they could do what Carvana is doing. They just choose not to. So what happens, I think, in the future is that when their back is against the wall, that's when they will wake up and do the right thing. For example, I think one day we're going to wake up and there'll be a press release that says that, let's say, Carvana partnered with Amazon. And at that point, it's game over, right? Because nobody, nobody can compete with Amazon. I don't care what you sell, right? What business you're in, Amazon is going to crush you. And they have a really good reputation, right? Nobody says, I'm going to get, you know, a terrible product and I won't be able to return it. I can't get the straight answer, right? Everything is in full disclosure, right? So I think that's where we're going, you know? And I just hope that dealers know that. But I think a lot of them are in denial, and that denial prevents them from changing their sales process.
What is it that scares them most? Because you're consulting with them. I mean, when they read these headlines, is the auto dealership dead? And you say to them, no, you're not dead, but if you don't do X, Y, and Z, you may actually foretell what that reality is, that you are going to be dead. So what are you telling them, and how quickly do they need to adapt to this environment?
I tell them that I think their main fear is the loss of profitability, right? Because they think that if they tell you what the price is up front, they're going to lose all the profit. But if you look, let's say, at Carvana's prices, or at CarMax's prices, they're really not cheap. They're not giving cars away. And they prove the concept that people are willing to pay premium for transparency and convenience. And dealers have a different philosophy. They feel that they can be maybe less expensive, but the customer has to give up transparency and convenience. And I think, you know, you can't blame them for thinking that way, because if you look back at the pre-internet days, all the control resided with car dealers, right? You couldn't say, well, I went online and I saw that the invoice price is this, and then there's this rebate, and you get this much incentive from the manufacturer. Right? This information was not available. You were almost like a hostage when you went to a car dealership because you had no other sources of information.
And now I'm reading where 54% of car buyers would pay more for a better experience at a dealership, and those car dealers willing to provide that experience will have a distinct advantage over the competition. I think that's probably pretty clear from all that you've said. Well, Max Zanin, I know that our time is up, but I want to thank you so much. If you're interested in the ultimate automobile retail expert, and maybe your dealership is flagging a bit, maxzanin.com. And I thank you so much, Max, for being with us today on America Trends. Very interesting.
Awesome. Larry, thank you for having me. And listen, feel free to reach out to me anytime you have any questions regarding automotive. That's the only thing I know, unfortunately.
Well, you know it well. Thanks again, Max.
You got it. Thanks a lot.